Hello and welcome to the first episode of IMIAC's latest podcast series titled About Us. This show is going to be looking at the consumer movement and the diversity within lived experience communities. Today I'm joined with IMIAC CEO Maggie Toko and we're talking to Mubarak. Maggie, would you like to introduce yourself and Mubarak?
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm the CEO of IMIAC, and Mubarak is a young community leader, and I met Mubarak at the Yarra Mental Health Forum. We co-facilitated with another young person, Joshua, a meeting amongst residents of the high-rise flats in Richmond, North Fitzroy and Collingwood. And it was a really eventful evening. COVID-19 was full on, but I was really impressed by both Mubarak and Joshua in their wisdom of how their communities need certain things, and that they both work within their communities. So I invited Mubarak to come and do a podcast, and I hope that it is one of many that we do. So I'll stop there and just introduce you to Mubarak. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Maggie. Hello, everybody. I think it was very kind of you to actually describe me as a young community leader. Thank you very much, Maggie. I think, as you mentioned, we know each other from a bit of work that we're doing within the community. But just to talk a bit about my background, I am from Eritrea. I came to Australia almost 5 years ago. And I am currently staying here as a permanent resident refugee. I think my background with community is kind of related to my upbringing, where in Eritrea, it's very multicultural, and where we focus so much on the cultural aspect rather than on individual self. So we have so much respect for the culture and the faiths that we bring them first before our individuals. Also, one of my obligations in my faith is the charity, giving charity to the community members, and that kind of enhanced my community work. I think after that, I moved at the age of 14. I moved to Egypt, and there I met a lot of young people from different backgrounds, having a hard life because of, they're either seeking asylum or being a refugee or even just, stateless. And from there, I was in a bit of a privileged position in terms of, knowing the language the Arabic language, knowing some of the systems in Egypt. And I saw that there is something that I can do to help, just a small part. And from there, my passion in community work grew more. When I came to Australia, one of the first careers that I learned was youth work. I didn't know what it was before, and I got really interested in it. And I, didn't have a qualification for it, but I was really passionate, and I started volunteering, slowly getting, one day a week job, and slowly getting to a position where I was considered a youth worker. This is where my community work background starts from. Maggie?
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's interesting that you say that you really started off with volunteering to get the experience. We recently, have written some training schedules around training volunteers. And certainly I imagine a lot of people in your community actually do that to get a foot in the door, to get employment and to get skills and qualifications and things like that.
Yes, definitely. And, for some of us, this kind of work is actually a lifestyle because it's something that we have to advocate for 24/7. So by doing that, which means, automatically we spend more time doing the community work, which means we develop skills, which means we can make an income from those skills. So I think it's kind of, you know, a passion or a dream coming true, like doing something you're really passionate about and getting outcomes out of it. So yeah, it's definitely a good place to be.
Oh, well, that's great. Mubarak, in terms of the community on the estates, is there a high need? I mean, we met at a mental health forum. Is there a high need for services on the estates? I know there are some services connected with the estates who provide mental health support and so on and things like that. But also, I was very conscious when we had the original meeting before the forum that there was a discussion about those services not coming to the actual forum to allow residents to speak and to say what was on their mind. Without saying, so I guess my question is, do you do a lot of work outside those services within the community on the estates?
Yes, Maggie, and I think it focuses on the preventative aspect of mental well-being. So one of the work that I do is with young men and young boys, where we try to normalize talking about emotional intelligence, basically. You know, as young men or young boys, we taught, you know, not to talk about emotions or, you know, not to express our feelings. And, you know, like we tend to build a lot of those negative thoughts and ideas. And I actually remember there was a place called the Man Cave, which described this analogy where they say, you know, like you have a bag and you keep putting big stones of, you know, emotions every time. And at some point that bag is gonna break. Another thing is we have like support groups of the community. You know, one of people who live in the States are very diverse and they do have their own traditions, you know, rituals that they do or they use to look after their mental well-being. So we kind of trying to discover those things, traditional medicine or traditional rituals or processes of mental well-being, basically.
Oh, fantastic. It must be so encouraging to the community that they can actually utilize their own tools. They don't actually need to go outside. Do you find, do you know if there are issues within the for the community around the involvement of mental health clinical services? Do you does your community have issues with community treatment teams, basically?
I think one of the issues in our communities is the stigma of mental health. So sometimes we don't even understand what the issues are. We actually start talking about them recently. So that means it takes time for the community to recognize those mental health issues. And it also takes time for them to get used to accessing those services. So one of my work, for example, is that normalizing the conversation around mental health, but also accessing the services. Some community members don't like accessing the services because they meet some of the community members and they think those community members are going to talk about them outside of the work. And some of them don't like accessing those services because they don't see a representation of themselves in those services as well. So it's kind of, you know, there is no one way approach to the issue. I believe there is multiple approaches and every community should be, what's the right word? The services should be tailored according to the community needs.
Yeah. That's a Really good point. And I guess from a BIMEAC perspective, we would really appreciate the knowledge of how to provide an how to open our organisation to the community. And I agree with you. I think we either do it the right way or we shouldn't do it at all. So in terms of stigma, would you have some ideas on how we can break down those barriers for the community?
Sure. I believe it's providing that safe environment where the community can actually come and talk about it safely without being judged, without being given advice, or without somebody trying to fix them. I think just the aspect of talking about it is the first thing that we need to overcome in our community. You know, we might like talking about it on media or on social media, but when it comes to, you know, like our families, our friends, our group of community around us, we don't really talk about them really deeply. We don't become vulnerable in expressing our emotions and feelings. So I do believe it depends on the facilitator and the person who's facilitating this discussion. One of the ways that's working for me is the rites of passage. So rites of passage framework, where we utilize, African rites of passage or other rites of passage from different communities. I know that Aboriginal communities utilize the, fire circles to open up this kind of conversation. So there is a lot of things to be done out there, but from my perspective, rites of passage seems to be working with young men and young boys. And a proof of that is the work that the Man Cave is doing as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I guess, Robin, are we coming to sort of a near end? Because I want to really give you an opportunity to talk about social entrepreneurship and leadership. If you're happy to talk about that.
Yeah, we have heaps of time to go explore that. And I'd also love to explore that with you, sort of out talking about, as I said, when we were talking to you before all this, you did talk about the importance of social entrepreneurship and leadership. So I'd love to hear your perspective and the sort of work you're sort of doing in that area in particular.
Sure. I think I've had about 12 jobs in 5 different industries in my 28 years of life. One thing that keep standing out is that I keep responding to the things that are happening in the world. I keep responding to what my boss wants or what the vision of another organization is, which is fine. But I had other dreams, or I had a bigger dream. I wanted to make a bigger impact. So I decided to take that step where if I'm doing a youth work, with organization, how can I utilize all the skills that I have learned with all these jobs, all the confidence that I have gained throughout the time in my personal experience? And the idea came after coming to Australia and seeing the opportunities that exist to actually start your own social enterprise. My thought came from, young people running their own organization and multicultural people running their own organization. There is a lot of complaints in terms of how, those services or the big companies run their services, or what are the internal policies. So instead of actually writing a complaint to this organization, how about I start an organization that kind of fits with the community, and then the community will have a part of in the vision as well. I think we as multicultural community, especially the young people, we need to recognize our skills and talents and maybe perhaps be a bit courageous in taking that step where we can actually start something from very small. And, it usually tends to be great, especially when it's something that's created in very hard times.
That's, that's just amazing. Our very first discussion, we talked about self-determination, to be able to stand up and be proud. And certainly that is a point of reference for your community and for our community as a whole. That's a great point.
Maggie, if you don't mind me jumping in and asking, Mubarak, do you have any of those organizations currently up and running or, you know, going that you would like to, you know, at least promote or tell listeners about?
Sure. So I have founded an organization called Young Assets Foundation. Mm-hmm. And our vision or mission is basically to put young people at the front of change for themselves and their communities. We do believe definitely in advocacy work, but we also believe in the young people taking ownership of their own lives by doing one person at a time, one small thing a day. And our aim is to see young people as assets, not problems, because there is a lot of strengths that we can get from there. So, the decision of finding Young Assets Foundation came, you know, after a year thought of having something like that.
And how's that been received by the community? I imagine it's embraced by the community.
Sometimes being, you know, labeled as a refugee comes with its benefits. You know, people don't expect you to do those kind of things. You know, like people expect you to just be an employee or do small work or those kind of things. But once you come up with those kind of things, I think there is that wowness, even from your own community. They say, oh, you've been here for 5 years, for 4 years. How can you do this really quick? And another thing is being a young person and creating something like this also, they see something in that. They also see the courage and the advocacy that I do for the community and my kind of a unique or different perspective, rather, I would say. So one of, let's say, the three of the projects that we recently had, they were all led by the community. And that's why the community is liking the Young Assets Foundation, because, you know, our aim is to put young people at the front, which means we give them the opportunity to actually lead the work that's been provided.
That is absolutely fantastic. And I have to say that it's incredibly encouraging that young people who have initiative and who have the willpower and the commitment to be leaders into the future is fantastic. And it's one of the things that BIMIAC wants to do too, which is to encourage consumer leaders to grow the consumer leadership movement. Mm. And I hope going forward, Mubarak, that we too can, that your community can access what BIMIAC does to grow your community as well.
Definitely, Maggie. Anything that will support and help my community grow is accepted anytime.
Fantastic. I think that's sort of a good place we can sort of start wrapping up. Mubarak, Maggie, did you, either of you have anything else you wanted to discuss?
Mm.
Well, Mubarak, so you're a youth worker. Do you imagine going on to other types of study or anything like that?
Like I mentioned, this is my 12th job in different 5 industries. I'm very unpredictable. I think in the recent years, I've become very intentional. So my aim in the future is to make a bigger impact. And I don't expect to see results, you know, tomorrow or the day after. I expect to see results in 5 years, in 10 years, when those young people, young men in general, are in a place where they are happy and they intentionally has planned to get there. I think one of my goals is to make people reach to live rather than survive. I think I don't know where this intention is going to take me, but at the moment I am studying Diploma of Leadership and Management just to help me a little bit with running the organization. I'm really interested in politics, and I have, you know, put a toe or one leg in that field as well recently. And definitely working in the public sector is one of my passions, because I believe in those big places you can make a bigger impact.
Well, look, I have to say, Mubarak, I really believe that whatever you want to do, you will do. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And as somebody who is for myself, I started off with those dreams, with exactly those dreams. And sometimes you have to be one-eyed. You can't let anything get in the way. And so, and that's what I did as my life has gone on. Yeah. And it's never, and I was also a youth worker, and it was just, and it was a passion. Mm. And it makes it so much easier when you like going to work because you like what you do.
Yes.
And so I would totally encourage you to believe what you believe and to go on. And I have no doubt that you will achieve many things, Mubarak. And you already have now. So that's fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on this podcast today. You're a shining light for the future, Mubarak.
Appreciate it, Maggie. And I wouldn't be here without all the support that I get from my, elders, from my parents, from my friends, but also from the young people who keep me passionate about my work as well. Thank you very much for having me.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Robin.
And thank you so much for joining us. And I think that is all we have time for today, but this is going to become a regular series and talk to more people. So look out for more episodes in the future. And thank you so much, both of you, for doing this with us today.